Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You have now ceased being a sports show. I mean, let's just put it out here. You've ceased being, because you're saying, I'm going to go to some jackass on television who does politics.
This guy, and Chuck, you finally have made the big time.
Yeah, so this guy can't even predict politics.
Hillary, who thought Hillary Clinton, yes, right. Who thought Hillary Clinton, who said Donald Trump would win? I want that guy to pick my NFL game.
Absolutely. Let's get Saliza Light on. See what
exactly.
He can do.
Yes. Is anybody worse than Saliza?
Saliza Light. Is there anything worse you could have done? Saliza Light.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty then. We are live from Chatter at the corner of Jennifer Street Northwest and Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, right inside the District of Columbia. We're open for breakfast every day we do this show. We start at 7 o'clock in the morning, and apparently the SOS went out because we have a nice crowd today. Yes. We're very pleased by that. We'll applaud the people who are here, including Bill Isaacson. Isaacson is here, and I've told the people who are sitting in if they need legal advice or theater tickets.
That's the guy.
They're in luck. Barry's Verluga is with us. Gary Braun is with us. Michael Kornheiser, the chief grilling officer of the Tony Kornheiser Show,
CGO,
is with us, and he grilled last night. Nigel will run the board and do the news. Michael grilled. So I had this terrible moment, and Gary brought the jalapeno peppers that you've grown yourself.
Yes.
And you said to Michael, if you're going to grill this weekend, no, he has to. He has to come over.
This is now in my job
title.
Yeah,
he has to grill this weekend. So he comes over last night. So Kate and Liz and Bootsy the baby come over. Bootsy now 6 feet,
BTB.
6'1".
Wow. Yeah.
So I tell Liz that Michael has said I have shrunk to 5'9". You know, I started at 6 feet tall at some point in my life. And Michael said the other day, what are you, like 5'9½" or 5'10"? And I said that to Liz. And Liz, who's big, and Michael's big, they tower over me. And Liz goes, well, maybe 5'10". And I was deflated for like Bootsy's like bigger than me already.
Sad.
I was deflated for the rest of the evening. It was very
sad.
It was sad.
But it was nice because you worked on your posture, so you actually looked like you gained some of that height back.
Yeah, and I'm kind of a stooped over guy now.
I'm 5'9". My dad, before my dad died, years before my dad died, I used to write about him that you could put him in the overhead in a plane. They had shrunk so much.
And very loving.
Now I see that is going to happen.
Loving
son. The highlight of the evening, besides Michael grilling sausages, which were really good. So Kate, when the drill is this. We are all sort of afraid that Chessie, in her zeal to say hello to everyone and love everyone, because she knows these people, not eat Bootsy, but knock someone down who's holding Bootsy and cause a crash.
Fumble.
Situation. So Kate's job, which she does so very well, is to entertain Chessie. Like after Kate leaves, Chessie falls asleep for the next week, which is good. She did an amazing thing last night. We play the Frisbee game with Chessie.
Yeah, sure.
Where you throw the Frisbee and Chessie goes and gets it and then never gives it up. So you have to throw there are usually five Frisbees that end up being carried around the backyard by Chessie. Kate threw one and it landed in a tree. It's in a tree in the backyard. Yes, it's in a tree.
Oh, why don't you have Bootsy get? Kids love to climb trees.
Irma could solve that.
Yeah, well, if Irma gets here.
One of your tomato-thieving neighbors could probably get up there.
Actually, I looked out this morning. It's still in the tree.
I thought you were going to say the highlight was when you calmed Bootsy down before we left for the evening.
Oh, the dulcet
tones,
huh? You had
the magic touch.
Bootsy, as soon as Carol picked up Bootsy,
twice.
Yeah, the baby starts
crying. You're smiling.
Yeah.
He loves it. He loves it.
That's an evil little grin.
I don't pick up Bootsy. Right. I walk over, Bootsy's sitting down, I touch Bootsy. Yeah. Shake his hand, put my fingers in his hand.
Plays dead, like Bootsy thinks you're a bear.
Yeah, I am the old grandfather. The old small grandfather, because Chan's like 6'8", although Liz now has Chan at 6'1", which is ridiculous. And Bootsy looks at me and likes me. And then I've done that. I walk on that.
You're out.
No, I am not going to stick around for Bootsy.
Let him get to know you.
I don't do that. All right, two things to get to in the open that are very important. One that's actually important and one that's important in a sports sense. So we'll start with the actually important one, and that is Hurricane Irma, which, according to all reports, has now picked out a course that, if it is sustainable, is going right up the gut of Florida. And both coasts, east and west, will obviously be affected by storm surge. We have a couple of people here today who came in from Savannah. They evacuated Savannah. We are happy to have them here, and we certainly hope for them and for everybody in the path of Irma that it is not nearly as bad as people say. If you grow up in New York, as I have, everybody in New York has friends or relatives in Florida. Everybody knows people who are going to be affected directly by this. And I guess this is the job of news networks. I guess it is to scare you to death so that every single time you tune into a news network, the word catastrophic is being bannered in such a way that you cannot escape it. We've watched something on TV that we assume to be true that was on Fox yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, when you say assumed to be true, what do you think he recorded it as a goof?
Predicting the death of everyone in the path
Shepard
of the hurricane?
Smith telling you if the hurricane
really?
Moves course 20 miles to the west,
Which
you and
has?
Everyone you know are dead, including your kids. Just, your kids are dead, too.
Unless you're lucky.
I can't imagine right. that's not... Like a cobbled together thing?
No, I believe
you think that
is
actually
true
happened?
Broadcast television. Tony.
Well,
but whatever. We may be wrong.
We all know people. I wondered how this works. Is it that it's the worst hurricane of all time? And if you compare it with Andrew, which was terrible in Florida 25 years ago, it looks to be twice the size of Andrew. But I can't help but think that part of this, part of the panic and... part of the scare is that our technology is so much better that we can see the hurricane now every 10 seconds on television. We can see it, and so it scares us even more.
Yeah, but I think that...
Like, you didn't even know what Andrew was going to look like.
If you're talking about 185-mile-an-hour winds when it hits shore and the path... I don't know that it's really technology. I think it's like the actuality of this particular storm and the path it's on. It's scary.
You see the... Everybody's where are they going? They're going to run
north.
Out of gas before they get to where they're going.
Well, so I can
there's no gas.
I can report from Chelsea Janes, our Nats beat writer, who was with the team in Miami, whose flight was 7 a.m. flight was canceled, and she got in a car. And
this was yesterday.
This was yesterday.
Here, in a
it
car.
Said, you know, Google Maps said 9 hours and 17 minutes from the Marriott in Miami to Atlanta Hartsfield. And it took her 16-something hours.
It's going to take more
traffic.
Today.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a standstill. There's only two northern routes. You're either on the turnpike or you're on 95.
Correct.
That's all you got.
You're
and
not,
it's a standstill.
You're not going over to the West Coast and going the slow route up up there. No, it's terrible.
So I have no idea what's going to happen. But the hurricanes that you have on the east are bad. And certainly Sandy was terrible for a lot of people we know, including Michael's godparents. As it washed out their house in Lido Beach on Long Island. But this seems to be projected much worse, right?
Yeah.
Much worse.
And not just tremendous winds, which Barry alluded to, but looking like 10-plus inches of rain for the entire east coast of Florida. Now, that might not sound like a lot in the wake
of like
Harvey.
Not like Harvey.
No.
I read a report where some... some accredited scientists said Houston had actually, under the weight of the water, Houston had sunk 2 centimeters
Whoa.
From the weight of the floodwater. It actually
I
impacted the
Michael
crust
and Liz
of the earth.
To stand over it and look and see
that's
as they
insane.
Stood over me
I mean,
last
that's
night.
An
what are you,
inch.
5'8"?
That's basically an inch yeah. of a city just sinking into the earth. Yeah, so, not like that in terms of the rain and flooding, presumably, but the predicted damage from these winds. And you know, you say technology has advanced. It certainly has. But we had the ability via radar to see Andrew like we can see Irma. And I've seen things where they've sort of transposed one next to the other, and Irma just completely
So Irma,
dwarfs it.
I mean, Irma, like a couple of days ago, Matt Kelleher, said to me that Irma was the size of Ohio, which was frightening because the entire width of Florida is not as wide, the peninsula is not as wide as Ohio. Yesterday, it was upgraded to this is France. And Wilbon says,
wow.
Oh, France, it's a small country. What's the big deal?
Small,
say,
country.
Small country. France
small
is a
country.
Square country. It's much bigger than Ohio. It's certainly bigger than Ohio, France. So if it's the size of France, I mean, this is...
I think Wilbon struggles with geography.
Just unbelievable. All right, let us get to gloomier, gloomier news if you're a New England fan, but lighter news all around, and that was the football game. Chuck Todd in his debut.
Oh, nailed it.
Chuck Todd, well, he didn't quite nail it because he said, I'm going to take the nine, well, but I still think the Patriots are going to win.
Which was a reasonable take.
But he wins. And he says that Andy Reid is the master of winning games that don't matter. Andy Reid has lost over 100 pounds. Andy Reid, the weight that Andy Reid and Rex Ryan have lost together is probably close to 300 pounds.
Wow. Much more than a 5'9 grandfather.
Patriots, right, absolutely. Tom Brady, you know, we did this story on PTI yesterday, which is, would you be surprised if this was the year that Brady fell off? And Wilbon said he would be surprised, and I said I'd be more surprised if he fell off than if he had an MVP year. He did not start out with an MVP year.
Looked mortal.
16 of 36 and sacked three times. Whereas Alex Smith...
All those sacks in the second half, I believe. They didn't get any pressure on him in the first.
368, four touchdowns, and no picks. And Alex Smith is a good but not a great quarterback. The Patriots gave up 42... They look like Texas against Maryland. They gave up 42 points and 537 yards. Barry, what do you say to this?
Well, I mean, it's been 54 regular season games, I think, since Tom Brady completed less than 50% of his passes,
which
he did last night. I just counted it up. And I think, you know, you look at the Patriots early on looked like they'd put him away, like, within the first 5 minutes.
If Gronkowski holds on, it's 14-0.
And I also think that it seemed like with a healthy Gronkowski, they were trying to force it to him a little bit. He had six targets, only two catches. Edelman's loss is—it's clear it's going to impact them. I mean, he's such a security blanket, and they've always. Amendola doesn't just—I mean, he had 100 yards receiving, but he doesn't just slide into that role. He's not the same thing.
Nope.
And then if you don't have, if you're trying to make Amendola Edelman, then you don't have Amendola.
Well, Amendola gets hurt and left last night, I think, with a concussion.
Amendola
always gets hurt.
This is not Armageddon in New England. I think it has to reflect really well on the Chiefs. I mean, this is a team that has aspirations too.
But they get to the playoffs and they gag.
Well, and that so we're 4 months from that.
So you don't see doom for the Patriots. Even though there's some incredible statistic, they had gone 87 straight games at home. If they had a lead at the half, they won.
Yeah. Amazing. Wow.
And they had a lead. That's unbelievable.
I mean, how do you predict doom for the Patriots with that coach quarterback in that division?
What if he got old?
Oh, that's totally
possible. It goes quickly when it goes, and I'm not far be it from me to get the first one on that train. I'm not suggesting it's gone, but I will tell you this, and I watched the entire game. All that pressure, those three sacks, it all came in the second half. They could not get to him at all in the first half. Didn't even try. A lot of times rushing just three guys. Brady would do that thing where he stood back in the pocket completely flat-footed and sort of surveying the field. There was one play in particular. He had something like 9 or 10 seconds to get rid of the ball.
Wow.
In the first half, Brady was missing open guys.
Sure.
He did not look
Do you know the analogy I would make? To Roger Federer in the U.S. Open.
Oh, sure.
That he did not, that if you watched him carefully, you would say he doesn't look like the Roger Federer who wins majors.
And I'm not saying this was the Peyton Manning we saw at the end, sort of rainbowing ball.
He's spaghetti arm.
I mean, he still had arm strength, but if this were the year where it fell off, people would look back at this game and say, man, it just goes quickly.
I would caution though, and I know he's now 40. It starts with a four. That's a big change. But there was a Monday night game in Kansas City.
I remember that.
It was probably 4 years ago.
2014.
Okay, so 3 years ago.
The year they beat the Seahawks in the Super Bowl.
And the questions to Belichick were literally, is Tom Brady your starter?
That's the we're on to Cincinnati game.
Exactly.
Everyone was saying, bring out Garoppolo and get it rolling.
And I can't take 60 minutes of football and say that this guy who has kept his body in the best shape of anybody, we're going to say he's done.
Nor am I. I'm not here
to bury him. The last three times they lost their opener, they won the Super Bowl.
There you go.
I mean, you can have a lot of statistics that can work for you or work against you, but what was very clear last night was that the Patriots were not good. The Chiefs crushed them. They crushed them when everything counted, and that is unlike Patriots teams at home. It's just really unlike that.
Correct.
Now, if this was the Dolphins or the Jets or the Bills, I'd be more inclined to panic.
Right.
The Chiefs are a quality. They're a quality
good team. Well, with they now
Andy Reid, when he has a bye week, which he's had for 6 months, as usually wins games.
And I would point out that, you know, Tom Brady didn't have anything to do with the 275-yard-plus little dumps to the backs.
Who is Kareem Hunt?
He's a rookie running back out of Toledo.
Not for him. I mean,
or is he Timmy? Is he Timmy Smith or is he something special?
No, he's something special. He was ranked by many as
and three.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he fumbled the first time he touched the ball.
Where did he play?
He went to Toledo, where, interestingly, as they pointed on the broadcast last night, never lost a fumble in 4 years. His first touch in the NFL loses a fumble. But they were citing all sorts of stats from Pro Football Focus, had him as the number one rated running back coming out. So he's talented. And with he and Tyreek Hill, they're now an explosive offense.
Yes.
Alex Smith, that was only the fifth or sixth time in his career he's thrown for 300 in a game. He went for 368 and four touchdowns. Against a depleted defense
and with
Hightower out.
And these 150 yards of that was on dumps to the back that they took to the house. Now, I'm not trying
to... The Hill, 78 yards to Hill was a bomb
where
he got behind everyone.
But isn't it great to have football to talk about?
That's great.
Isn't that great? All right, we will take a break. When we come back, we will have Anne Hornaday. She is in Toronto for the Toronto Film Festival. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the MeUndies ad that we edit ourselves, because there's a couple of paragraphs here we're not going to read. And this is the male version.
Yes.
Because there's a male version and a female version.
That's
be
right.
Silly
I'd love to hear you read that one,
I couldn't. I'd have to falsetto it. You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right?
Yes, of course. Thank you. Yes.
Audience participation. But that perfect balance is hard to find. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies.com and find the best pair of underwear in the world. MeUndies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will own, made from a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. Ladies will love the soft, eco-friendly fabric. There's a 100% satisfaction guarantee. They guarantee you will love your undies or your money back. Right now, MeUndies has an exclusive offer just for my listeners, and that's people who are listening right now. You get 20% off your first pair, and you get free shipping. And MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear, they even offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. You order a pair. If you don't love your first pair, you get a full refund. This is a no-brainer to try. 20% off, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. What are you waiting for? To get your 20% off, free shipping, and the 100% satisfaction guarantee, and get the best and softest underwear you will ever own, go to MeUndies, MeUndies, MeUndies.com/Tony K. That is MeUndies.com/Tony K. Limited time offer. Do it now. Start wearing the best underwear of your life. It's changed my life. Well, no, it hasn't. I know you wrote that and you want me to say it. It hasn't changed my life.
Well, it has, and that you didn't read this before.
This. Yes, that's very true.
It's time to let MeUndies change your life. Go to MeUndies.com/Tony K right now.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Every day I saw myself. My expression, always taking on so many different shapes, planning my escape.
I love this. This is Hot Pink Hangover. And the email reads, Hot Pink Hangover continues to get so many amazing fans on our Facebook and YouTube pages. Whenever we get airplay on your show, we would love for our new single to have its debut on your amazing show. They must have us confused with some other show. This one is called Fragile 17. We just released a music video for it, which tells the story of an intergalactic love affair between our lead singer and an alien from a distant planet, Howard Fineman, because he's intergalactic.
That's right.
And Davey Hazard, who's the guitarist for Hot Pink Hangover, says, being a Minnesota band, we are also curious to hear your thoughts on the playoff chances for our shiny new Timberwolves team. They're good. Except they're in the Western Conference, where everybody seems to be going at the moment. If Minnesota could somehow say, wait, put us in the East, they'd probably win everything. That's a very good band, Hot Pink Hangover.
That is good.
Very happy to have that. And they play in Anne Hornaday, who is in Toronto at the annual TIFF, the Toronto Film Festival, as she calls it. And Anne and Arch Campbell do a regular podcast from these great studios at Chatter that Nigel is involved with. And Nigel told me that you wanted not so much to talk about movies today, though there are a couple you can talk about. I've seen absolutely nothing this summer, absolutely nothing. But he said you wanted to talk about big summer movies that worked and big summer movies that failed.
Yeah, it was an interesting summer. First of all, welcome back. It's great to be back. I can't believe it's been a whole summer.
Yes, well, these things happen.
But that's life.
Yes.
But yeah, it was a really interesting summer because Hollywood sort of hit historic lows in terms of box office
really?
And attendance records. Yeah, it was a really bad summer commercially for them. But then if you read between the lines of that, like, it was funny to me that the news was so bad commercially because I actually felt like it was a relatively strong summer in terms of the quality. Like, even, like, I am not the biggest comic book movie fan. I think the genre is on its, I think it's on the verge of exhaustion. But then we had these really good comic book movies like Wonder Woman and Spider-Man, which was extremely well executed, even though I dreaded seeing it. You know, I thought, oh my God, one more time back to the well. Yeah. Enough already. And it was actually really good. Planet of the Apes, another example. Now, both of those, Spider-Man and Wonder Woman, actually did pretty well, very well. One movie that really, I think, didn't and disappointed was War for the Planet of the Apes, which, you know, you could look at that and go, oh, my God, another reboot, another sequel of a reboot. Again, how many of these do we need? That happened to be an extremely well-executed movie, very, very well done. But I think that was an example of audiences, I don't know, I just being sequeled out, you know. So it could be an interesting bellwether that I think Hollywood has figured out that quality matters. They can't just slap this stuff up on four walls and expect people to come just because it's a Planet of the Apes movie or a Spider-Man movie. But now I think they're faced with maybe an audience that is becoming tired of just, you know, another sequel, another chapter of a franchise, another. And originality turned out to be a big success, like things like Dunkirk and The Big Sick, Girls Trip. I mean, those were original movies. Those were not based on comic books or video games or toys.
Well,
and
I would hardly think that Dunkirk was based on a comic book.
You know what I'm saying.
Actually,
I know, but, you know, it was original. It was not only an original script, but, I mean, it was an original concept in terms of the way that he executed it, you know, his whole time shifting.
Can I ask the obvious question?
Why did you see Dunkirk? Yes.
Mm-hmm. The obvious question is, because I work, the job that actually pays money, that I'm not losing money on, I work for a cable sports network that is not losing money by any stretch of the imagination, but is losing viewers. Viewers are eroding. Yeah. People are getting their sports or, you know, their highlights quicker and from someplace else. Is there exactly some chance that people under the tipping point age, whatever that age is, have decided, I'm not going to the movies?
Well, I can only report from the front lines of having a teenager at home and knowing that the movies are still a relatively affordable way for them to get out of the house and out from under the withering gaze of their parents.
Okay.
I mean, and you know where you really do see that, and you're going to see it this weekend, is with horror movies. Like, It is opening today.
Nigel has seen that. You have not seen that, right?
No, because I was on my way to Toronto.
Nigel, you loved it.
I thought it was very good, and I'm not a big horror movie guy, but I read the book. If you like Stephen King, yes, you will never watch it.
I'm afraid of horror movies, so
yes,
I don't.
There's a lot of
as well. You should be.
There's a lot of like jump out of your seat moments.
Yeah,
but they did a really good job with it. And there's a young actress who you've never heard of named Sophie Lillis. She's 15 years old. Steals the movie. She's going to be a star.
Okay.
She's terrific.
Oh, I love that. That's so exciting.
Yes.
Well, it's gotten incredible review. I think at 100 or thereabouts on Rotten Tomatoes. And so, yeah, I think certain genres like horror and comedy. Like, I went to go see Girls Trip on my own. I had missed the press screening. So I just went, paid my money, and went with an audience. And I had a blast. I mean, like, movies like that are exponentially more enjoyable when you see them with a crowd, you know?
Yeah.
Either you're getting scared together or you're laughing uproariously together. So I still think, or you have an event movie like a Dunkirk where you really should see it on the big screen. Like, you're missing something if you... So I do think that people do still turn out, you know, for certain kinds of movies. And I do still think young people, I do think they go to... They're watching them all the time on their devices.
Right.
So, you know, if it's... It's just that sweet spot, you know. But I still think they go to the films.
Were there movies during the summer? And again, honestly, I not only have watched nothing, I don't even know the names of these movies in the summer. but were there movies in the summer that you had high hopes for that really stunk?
Well, I had high hopes for Atomic Blonde, the Charlize Theron movie. Uh-huh. She was, you know, she was so great in that Mad Max movie. I mean, she is so good as a badass, you know. And this looked like it was going to be that persona, really tough, and it just was. It was just a bunch of cliches, unfortunately. I mean, it looked great. She's amazing. I mean, it was not her fault at all. It was just a ludicrous script. So that, I guess, that would count as a disappointment. Yeah, I guess that would be the big standout, probably. Yeah, I mean, I somehow managed to dodge things like Baywatch and Transformers and Pirates of the Caribbean and that dreck. So, and I guess one other, I have not been doing handsprings over Guardians of the Galaxy anyway. Like, I liked the first one fine. I didn't love it. And I really didn't like the sequel, you know. But
I'll roll through the channels on the movies, you know, on the cable channels that I have, HBO and whatever. And I will look, and there'll be something like that. And my first question to myself is always, which one is this? Is, you know, is it the third one, the eighth one, the first one? Is it the good one? Is it,
I just say no.
I'm not watching. No. So
I know it's just ludicrous.
Which Batman is this? You know, there's 100 Batmans.
I know, and they're doing it again. Yeah. I know.
All right. So I am very. I don't want to say I'm very anxious, but I will say this. There is a movie coming out called Battle of the Sexes. This is a movie about Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs. And I'm sort of anxious to see it primarily at this moment, because when you look at the stills from it, Steve Carell looks exactly, it's uncanny how much Steve Carell looks like Bobby Riggs. The same is not, I mean, you know, Emma Stone looks a little like Billie Jean King, but the Steve Carell part is amazing. So I wanted to see that. And now I find out that you've seen a Borg McEnroe movie. I didn't even know there was one of those. What's that?
This I saw yesterday, and I liked it so much. It's about that Wimbledon. It's about the Wimbledon final. Their first Wimbledon final.
When one of the sets goes 21-19 or something like that.
I mean to tell you, and I do remember watching that. I had this dim memory, but I couldn't remember who won.
Borg.
Right? There was a lot riding on it.
Borg won.
Mr. Spoiler Alert.
That's not a spoiler. It happened. It happened.
I know. It's some of us have forgotten. So for some of us, it's a suspense movie, okay? It's a thriller.
Right.
But he was coming up for his fifth and a record-breaking fifth Wimbledon title, and McEnroe would have had his first. So a lot was riding for both of these guys on it. And like you said, it goes into this absolutely surreal tiebreaker. I mean, it just goes on forever.
Which actually happened.
And I do remember that.
Not a
comic
book.
I remember when the announcer said, at this point, this is about who has the most heart. Remember that?
No.
It's like, this is a match about heart. Oh, I'll never forget it. I was like, that is so profound. But here's the thing. It's a Swedish production. So it's mostly Swedish actors. Stellan Skarsgård plays the coach.
Yeah.
This actor, speaking of Nigel's discovery, this actor Sverre Gudnason, I don't know how you pronounce his first name, Sverre Gudnason plays Borg, and I mean, it is a phenomenal performance. He looks exactly like him, and here's the masterstroke, Shia LaBeouf plays McEnroe.
And he's good? So I don't really like him.
He is.
I mean, well, that's nothing for
the
me.
The thing, though, they're leveraging those feelings you have, right?
Your
predisposition to not liking McEnroe.
But I do like McEnroe. Well, I don't like Shia LaBeouf.
You're a contrarian.
Right, I like McEnroe's from Queens. Come on, stop.
It's Johnny French Mack. For
the Booth. You understand things about McEnroe, right. I mean, it's like, and I remember, too, I'll never forget, a relative of mine explaining McEnroe to me, and it really made me reframe the behavior. But still, I do think it's a great casting coup to get. I mean, A, I think LaBeouf is very good.
Isn't this odd?
He brings that baggage in a way that's helpful to the role. But it's mostly about Borg, and it's a fascinating kind of psychological portrait of him. And the tennis is wonderful. The way I believe they've edited in real footage from the match, and then they have tennis doubles playing for them. But I mean, it is seamless. It's really very good. It's very engaging.
It's better than your phone. Yeah. Your phone is awful. Do you have Bob Ryan's phone? Your phone stinks. It's just so terrible.
Sorry.
It's, well, it's
Canadian, right. Man.
It's is it a Canadian phone?
Yeah, she's in Canada.
It's my phone. I'm in my little apartment.
Why are two tennis movies about events that happened 40 years ago coming out in the same week? Why is that?
It happens all the time. It's just I have absolutely no idea. It's so random.
Honestly, it sounds like you're driving in the Lincoln Tunnel and your phone is beeping.
Why.
It's beeping. All right. This is great. Come back to America. We'll talk to you next week.
Well, I should point out that Ann and Archer's podcast will be posted at around noon Eastern time today for everyone that wants to listen to it.
Excellent. So it's already up, ostensibly.
Oh, yes.
As you listen to this.
Yeah, as you listen to this, it's already up. So check it out. Yes.
Thank you, Ann. Enjoy yourself.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Ann Hornaday. We love Ann Hornaday. Yeah. Boy, how bad was that?
Terrible. Definitely Ryan-esque with the beeping. And it sounded like every time it beeped, she had to move 10 feet further away from it.
She probably took that personally. Yeah. I mean, I don't even know her. I mean, she probably took that personally.
No, she apologized. She just said, "Oh, I'm so sorry about the phone." I said, "Well, it happens.
Buy a new phone." Her feelings. Entertain
you know what?
Me.
Yeah, buy a new phone.
Blame Canada.
All right, let's. All right, we'll come back. We'll come back with news.
That's right.
We'll come back with news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here's a SeatGeek ad for absolutely no reason because they don't. Do they sell seats to movies? They sell seats to concerts
Not
and
movies,
sports.
Not movies, concerts, sporting events.
Yeah. So we're just putting it in now maybe? Just because it's funny. And, you know, it's the right time to put it in. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps of your phone. SeatGeek, you know, it just says in two taps. Because that everybody knows it means of your phone, but because I don't, I always say of your phone. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you identify immediately the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And, it's so great because it writes copy, which says, I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I found to shop for tickets. A, I don't have it, and B, I've never shopped for tickets. Right. So I can't read that. I mean, I can't read that. Here's what I can read. Best of all, listeners to this pod get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app. You enter the promo code Tony today. That's promo code Tony, T-O-N-Y, for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Johnny Cash.
Kevin Martin sends us in and he writes, I've been a loyal little for many years. I play upright bass in a rockabilly band out of Ventura, California called the Rock Cats Rock. This is a track from our CD that we were fortunate enough to record at the legendary Sun Records in Memphis, Tennessee. Kind of a dream come true, but not as big as if we get included in the likes of I Have a Piano. The name of the track, Prison Break. Of course it's Prison Break. Of course. Really hope it makes the cut. Michael, how do people get their original music played on this show? We're pretty good for that, right? Original music gets played here. How do they do it?
They can email it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
There's a guy.
Do you hear the ambient noise? We got a leaf blower. Yeah. He's back.
Quiet a second. Let's let him carry.
He's back for more cash.
He's back. And if people want to buy Chatter stuff?
So the shirts are now available to order. The pre-sale is done and they're ready to ship. So you can go to shop.tonykornheisershow.com and find out that Chatter t-shirt.
And they're nice, right?
It's a t-shirt. It looks nice.
And we're going to make umbrellas, aren't we?
It's material. We are going to make umbrellas. So thank you to Jen Babish for that recommendation. We're going to go forward with the umbrellas.
What is the umbrella going to say?
Tell Michael.
Isn't that great?
Tell Michael umbrella. I like it.
Isn't that great?
That's a tremendous idea.
I think that's
fantastic.
Great. All right, it's time for news, and Nigel is here to do the news.
Yes, Mr. Tony, we'll start out with the U.S. Open.
Yes.
Semifinals last night on the women's side. Sloane
last
Stephens.
Last night was a very good clicker night.
Hard to keep track.
You had the tennis, you had the baseball, you had the football. It's a good clicker night.
Right, and on the women's side, yes, Sloane Stephens outlasted Venus Williams, 6-1, love 6-7-5. She advances on the
finals. Venus Williams was up 5-4 in the third. This is Venus Williams. Sloane Stephens has never been to a final in a major. She is unranked, unseeded. She's actually like ranked 83rd in the world.
Right.
Venus Williams is one of the all-time. Don't be fooled by Serena. Venus Williams was first to be one of the great players in that family. And she's won a bunch of majors. And I thought she was going to close that out, and she did not. Sloane Stephens won three games in a row.
It's disappointing, I think, for, you know, because Venus has only so many more in the tank, and this has been an unbelievable year for her.
For Roger Federer.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But I think anybody watching that, when she lost that first set, the air was kind of out of that stadium because, you know, everybody,
but
nothing
gets
back. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Six love in the second.
You
right?
know, and you
how
think,
does that happen?
You think she's going to win?
Sure.
I thought she was going to win, and I don't. She's 37.
That's right.
If her sister comes back to play, she's not winning anymore. This was her chance. This was her chance to win.
Because
Sharapova is going to come back and be stronger. And this
you talk
was
about
her
it being over for Brady. I mean, I think we're watching the last run for
Venus.
Yeah.
And I think for Federer as well.
Sure.
She will play Sloane Stephens. There was a really good story in the Washington Post yesterday about Sloane Stephens by Chuck Culpepper.
He is so great.
Who normally writes about college sports.
He can write about anything.
And he wrote about her mom. And her mom was a ranked swimmer at Boston University and went to the Nationals. She was the first black female swimmer to compete
Correct.
Regularly in the Nationals. And from her perspective, she talked about her child. She then married a New England Patriots player. So there is athletic lineage in that family, as there is with Coco Vanderway, who
Correct.
Did not make the finals.
No.
And in Coco Vanderway's... her family goes back to Ernie Vanderway, who was an All-American basketball player who I believe married an All-American swimmer.
Is that
or something
right?
Like that. I mean, it's like the Christian McCaffrey lineage.
Yeah.
You just go, whoa, look at this. So anyway, now let's talk about the second
match. So Madison Keys, really an easy match. Vanderway, who had been playing brilliantly.
Who wept afterwards.
Yeah.
She cried because she was routed.
Yeah, 6-1, 6-2.
That was routed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So who do we like in the final?
Oof.
Well, you're Mr. Tennis.
Well, I mean, who do I like or who do I want to win?
No, who do you think will win?
I think Sloane Stephens will actually win.
Really?
I do. I think, yeah, when she gets to the finals, I mean, I've seen her do this at the City Open where she would go out early all the time, and then when she made a good run, she was dominating in the finals. So I actually like Sloane Stephens.
But you want Keys to win?
No, actually, I think I want Sloane Stephens. She's a local, you know? I'm behind her. I've met her. She's very lovely, so, you know, I mean, everything.
She's a local?
Yeah, she's in from local area, I think.
She's born and raised here?
Stateside, he means.
I don't think he's
no.
I thought there was always a local tie to her.
I mean, for you, she's local because she's American,
well, yes,
and that's all,
is.
It's all.
I will find out from Sloane Stephens.
Yeah, no, that'll be
who do you think
easy.
Wins, Barry?
I take Stephens. I mean, I can't say that I've watched every point here, but she's the more. I think she's the even though she's unseated and ranked. I feel like she has a longer history.
Not large, not big.
No.
Small.
No. But also, like, what you know? How long has the narrative? You guys may have talked about this before. Been, oh, American tennis is nowhere, and there's no stars. There's no pipeline.
Well,
you know.
Well, it's because Serena Williams has been so dominant.
But there haven't been scenarios where in a Grand Slam semifinal there's been even if Serena is one of them, the three others were Americans.
No.
I mean that's since 1985,
no.
I believe.
Sloane Stephens, program height and weight 5'7", 134 to your point. Born in Plantation, Florida, resides in Coral Springs,
Florida. She's got some ties to the area.
She's
Miami.
Been to Washington.
She's played in the Open.
Something more significant than that. Something more significant.
So these people from Savannah been to Washington.
Right. Yes, right. Also local ties. We root for them as well.
Well, if we're going to be in the mood to correct, I want to point out size of countries and states.
Is Ohio bigger than France?
Ohio, 44,000 square miles.
You hear this guy? He's blowing
yes,
his sleeves around.
New sponsor.
He's
going to
be a regular guest.
And France, 211,000 square miles.
So which
give
is
or
bigger?
That's funny. Give or take 170,000 miles.
I got France at like a quarter of a million square miles. Yeah. But anyway, like about the size of Texas. Seriously. But I mean, that was on the internet. It's not.
Wilbon had that wrong.
I have Texas 268,000 square miles.
That's what
miles.
I had for them too. Yeah.
No, Texas is bigger than France.
Yes.
Texas but I had France.
What else
like
do you have for news?
Let's see. What do we have? Well, not good times for one of the hosts from WFAN. You may have seen this story. Craig Carton, who's been a co-host of the Morning Sports Talk
for
show
for 10 years.
WFAN with
this
Boomer
is a
Esiason.
Hit show.
Yes. Yeah.
This is a hit morning drive show.
Is New York a big market?
It's not pretty big.
Still, right? Well, apparently he's been arrested. He was arrested on Wednesday. Well, authorities announced about this yesterday. Faced up to 45 years in prison, charged with securities fraud, wire fraud, and conspiracy, and fines of millions of dollars for having a sham to lure people in.
Ponzi scheme.
With tickets, saying, oh, I can get you these tickets. It costs, like, it'll be a great investment. And then took the money and just used it to pay off what apparently...
$3 million?
Yeah, $2 million to casinos and almost $1 million to an unidentified third-party source. Who may or may not be.
Who may or may not.
Yeah, that could be a lot of things. I wouldn't jump to any conclusions.
May or may not have
a
crowbar in his back pocket.
So if you read the quotes from Boomer Esiason, they are the quotes that any of us would have had given this circumstance, which is, I had no idea. I've worked with this guy for 10 years. I love this guy. I love his family. I love his kids. I had no idea.
But if
I'm praying for him.
If you have $3 million in gambling debts, I don't think you come in, prepare for your show, and are like, yeah, I lost another $100,000 last night. Boom. You know, I mean,
That is in the corner of your life.
And you are waking up in the middle of the night, and it doesn't go away, and it's scary stuff. I mean, this guy's in trouble.
And as collateral damage here, of the 5.8 million that he bilked investors from, 4.6 million of it comes from a group called Brigade Capital Management, who invested in this scheme. And I think that's going to probably end up being sort of bad.
He's not going to do this show again.
No.
This doesn't sound like his defense is going to work. This sounds like they have this stitched up.
Can you set up a podcast studio from a cell?
Well, I guess you
probably could.
45-year max sentence he faces. Wow. Which he won't.
What else you got?
Big hit by Trey Turner last night, and the Nats win 4-3, and the magic number, not that anyone really seems to be concerned with it, is now 4.
You think they'll do it?
I know Barry
knows
this.
Do you think they can do it?
For all the talk about the Dodgers, and there's been a lot of talk about the Dodgers, for the talk about how Cleveland has won now 15 in a row, how Houston has been great all year, the Nats, they are like the Patriots playing in the AFC East. There is nobody at 500 in the Nats division other than the Nats. They're 19 up. They have the largest, right? The largest margin of any team. That doesn't mean they're the favorites in the World Series. It means they're in a stinking division, but they can't lose.
Okay, but I think we need to, if this team is healthy, don't undersell them either. If they have all their parts, forget about the division.
Okay.
They are going to be a favorite, a co-favorite. The Dodgers have lost 12 of 13 and are reeling.
Yes.
Reeling.
Yes.
Any sort of mystique, Boz wrote about this morning, any sort of mystique that they had built
is
over the course of the summer, done. Arizona looks better than them now, and Arizona is still going to have to win the wild card game to advance. If Harper comes back and is in, you know, his full form, don't sleep on the Nats. And I know that's kind of a terrible thing to say.
Okay. So you are okay with their bullpen.
Their bullpen is not their strength, and it is not – Sean Doolittle is not Kenley Jansen. I am okay with their bullpen. Okay.
Sean Doolittle had a good inning last night to close. But most of the time, and I pointed this out yesterday, when you read his line, it's 1-2, you know?
Yeah, I understand that. I totally get that. And that is the one area where they don't match up with the Dodgers. But I think they –
okay.
I think they match up well everywhere else.
Anything else for news?
Cleveland Cavaliers introduced Isaiah Thomas yesterday, along with Jay Crowder.
Did you see this? Did you watch this?
I didn't see it.
It's one of the great press conferences of all time. The new general manager, Kobe Altman, who engineered a trade that most people think was pretty good for Cleveland because Kyrie Irving wanted to leave, and they got back Isaiah Thomas, who is not just an all-star guard, but was the best scorer in the fourth quarter of anybody in the league last year. Okay.
And they get that Nets pick, which could be pretty
high. But that's Futurama. Nobody really knows what that is.
LeBron won't be there anyway.
Yeah, and they got Jay Crowder, and they got some giant from Eastern Europe with an unpronounceable name. So Kobe Altman gets up in the microphone to introduce all of these people, and he starts praising Isaiah Thomas, who has a hip injury, who has apparently written – Or somebody wrote for him that his name is on, that he has a torn labrum in his hip. This is not insignificant. And so the first question is, Isaiah, how's your hip and when are you going to be able to play? And Kobe Altman says, hey, we're not going to talk about his hip. Let's talk about the future. Let's talk about the fact that Isaiah Thomas has scores 25 points a game and he's clutch and he's got heart and he's an all-star and he got a lot of MVP votes. Next question.
Wilt scored 100 in a game. Let's bring him out.
Next question goes like this. You know, with all due respect, when are you going to play? How's your hip? Kobe Altman then says, this is not going to be the Isaiah hip press conference. And tries to but you're a reporter.
Detached from reality.
The only question that matters is, when are you going to play?
And when you're a reporter sitting in a press conference that is going like that, you can't wait to ask the next question. Can I ask the next question about the hip?
Because it's about the hip.
So again, about the hip, it is a challenge, and it's an insane way to manage a relationship with the media. That's crazy.
If you looked at Kobe Altman yesterday, you would get the textbook definition of a person in over his head. There's a million things he could have done to defuse this and do it better, and he was not coached well. He was given no advice. He looked terrible in this. Isaiah Thomas looked terrible in this. And by the way, if you're a Cleveland fan and you watch this, you said, oh, my God, he's never going to play.
Right.
He won't play all year. He'll sign somewhere else. And here's what we got for Kyrie Irving, Jay Crowder, and a gigantic human being from Eastern Europe.
It's also like, can't you predict how this is going to go? If you say you can't ask about the hip, one,
why
that's
you
all they're going to ask
a
about.
Press
and then it also delays. I mean, if they don't get an answer now, they're going to want the next availability is going to be all about the hip too. It's crazy.
Totally crazy. It was totally crazy. Absolutely crazy. All right, are we good?
We're good.
All right, so we will have Old Guy Radio when we return. Richard Justice,
that's right,
of MLB.com, who is a Houston native, who lives, actually he's a Waxahachie native, but he lives in Houston, Barry, right?
That's correct.
He's worked for the Houston Chronicle for years
before MLB.com.
All right, we'll be back. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And this is the Harry's Razor ad. Have we done the Harry's Razor ad recently?
Yeah,
I guess yesterday.
About shaving with Harry's? Well, my answer would be I love shaving. I mean, what do I love most about it? I don't know.
The long conversations?
Yeah, the walks on the beach. Well, I don't even understand that. Harry's, you have to shave.
We've been through a lot.
Yeah, it's a good shave, right?
We've been through a lot, that razor and
I. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades, they'll give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/TonyK. All you have to do is pay for the shipping. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why 3 million guys and more have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who are fed up with buying overpriced razors, started Harry's to fix shaving. Don't they live near Reale? In Brooklyn? Not in Brooklyn, in Lower Manhattan?
Oh, yeah, he had
connection. Some connection where
the kids go to school together or something like that.
Does Reale shave?
Yes, he does. So Jeff and Andy bought their own German factory with over 100 years of blade making experience to ensure the highest quality. All products are backed by 100% quality guarantee. Harry's offers their blades at half the price of the leading 5-blade razor, selling directly to you over the internet. You can claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value. It is for free when you sign up. All you have to do is cover the shipping. It comes with a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, which really smells good, and a travel blade cover. To get your free trial set, go to harrys.com/TonyK right now. That is Harry's, harrys.com/TonyK.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Robert Zimmerman from Hibbing, Minnesota. This is A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. And we're doing this in preparation, in honor, in anticipation, in fright of Irma following Harvey. Two devastating hurricanes, apparently. Harvey definitely was. Irma probably will be. You have some story about this.
Well, yeah. When Dylan talked about writing this song, basically he said every single line in the song was the first line of a song that I didn't think I'd have time to write. So I just put them all together, and this is what I came up with.
Yeah, that's the good old days. The good old days for Bob Dylan.
And it's from one of his early, I mean, this is from 1962.
This is pre-electric.
Freewheeling Bob Dylan.
Yeah, it's pre-electric.
Yeah,
pre-electric.
Just fantastic.
Richard Justice of MLB.com joins us now. And as I said earlier in the show, a native of Waxahachie, Texas, but a resident of Houston, Texas. I assume you have seen this firsthand, what happened to Houston with Harvey. What was it like? And, you know, it, on a personal level, and also the effect, I guess, from a baseball standpoint, on the Houston Astros.
Well, Tony, it wasn't like other hurricanes we've had. In 2008, I lost a corner of my house. There was no wind with Harvey. This was just rain.
Yeah.
On the south side of Houston, around NASA, 50 inches. My friend Brian McTaggart took photos, which he was outside his home watching the water come up his sidewalk, okay? Yikes. It's now 6 feet from my door. It's now 4 feet from my door. Photos out the back of his home, it looked like he had a lakefront home, and there was photos like that everywhere. It was just water, and on the west side of town, there's still water. You drive through the freeways now, most of the freeways are open, but it's caked with mud. It's like you're driving on a riverbed. On the other hand, Tony, there are things that are so inspiring about this. Neighbors helping neighbors, strangers helping strangers. I mean, it didn't matter if you were black or brown. Truckers from Oklahoma came. College football teams loaned their trucks. There's a furniture guy here named Jim McInvale, a kind of a legendary guy. His whole business has become a staging area for supplies. And I went with the Astros to the George R. Brown Convention Center, which at one point had been home to 10,000. I walked in, a cop sees me, and he goes, take a deep breath, buddy. And you walk in, and the first table you see is missing persons. There are people walking around with these blank stares. But it was set up like a town. There were barbers there. There were clowns there. The Astros came and just played with kids. And so from that, there's a lot of goodwill came out of it. But there are a lot of people are going to be weeks and weeks. Everyone here knows someone who lost a home. I don't know anyone that lost a loved one, thank goodness. But it was quite an experience.
This is a very minor point that I'm going to get to, but I wonder about it. As Harvey was receding, the Houston Astros went and got Justin Verlander. They could have probably gotten him before that, and it appeared, you know, that they didn't. Do you think that the hurricane and maybe the notion on the part of the Astros that we can be a force for good in this city, let's go get this guy and show the people what we're meaning to do?
I don't think specifically in the case of Verlander. That went right down to the deadline for getting a guy on the playoff roster, and they were going back and forth. And finally, the Tigers said to Justin, the Cubs haven't made the best deal. We're not going to make this trade with the Cubs, and you have about 15 minutes to decide. And he said he was pacing in his apartment that he shares with Kate Upton, his fiance, and he was saying, trust your instincts. Wait, what are my instincts? And he just said, okay, I'm going. I'm going to go back and get in a pennant race. But the team gets it. I mean, this manager, A.J. Hinch, Tony, has said everything right. He could be the conscience of the city. He and the mayor, Sylvester Turner. Somebody asked him last week, how are you going to get your players to put this out of your mind? We'd all gone to the convention center on Friday and seen these sites. And he said, wait, I don't want this out of their minds. I want them to think about this, and I want them to come back here and work a week from now, a month from now. We're part of this community. The Astros thought they were going to stay in Tampa last weekend and play the Mets. And the mayor said, hey, the only way to get back to normal is to do some normal things. Get back here and play baseball. And I think they understood that. We saw it with the earthquake, Tony. We saw it with 9/11. We've seen it with other things.
Yep.
For a couple hours each day, it gives you something else to think about. And there's a power in that. And these players, they get it. You know, they didn't want to be away. They wanted to come back home and check on their families and their homes and their neighborhoods and all. And they did extraordinary work. A couple of the relievers, Davinsky and Musgrove, went over to the soccer stadium and just helped pack goods and stuff. It's not unlike what we saw the Mets and Yankees do in the wake of 9/11. But I do think they understand that there is power. They got their team back last week. There was an emotional reset coming home. They hadn't played well for 4 or 5 weeks. Everybody had been hurt. They get two All-Stars back, Correa and Lance McCullers. They get Justin Verlander. They haven't lost since, and it just it feels like it means a little more because people, there's a power. You know, when you heard David Ortiz say, this shirt I'm wearing today doesn't say Red Sox. It says Boston, and I think you feel that if you live here.
That baseball question. Cleveland has won 15 games in a row, and I think 14 of them without Andrew Miller, maybe 15 without Andrew Miller. Houston right. and Cleveland look like it's an inevitable matchup in to get to the World Series. Do you give an edge to either?
I give an edge to Cleveland right now just because Jim Leland always said, don't tell me who won the most games. Tell me who's healthy. Tell me who's playing the best. Now, they're both playing well. But on opening day, we would have said Cleveland might be the only perfect team in baseball. And even without Andrew Miller, their pitching at the front end is unbelievable. They have this kid, Jose Ramirez, who's been out of his mind. I always think to be a great team, you got to have starting pitching. You got to have shutdown relievers. They have that. They don't have their wild card, Andrew Miller, but they expect to. And then you got to have one guy. Like, remember, we saw George Brett in 87. We've seen David Ortiz a couple of years ago. You have to have one guy who's crazy hot, and that guy is Jose Ramirez, and things are just clicking. But this was a big week for the Astros. They were going to get their team back. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in Seattle. Keuchel, Verlander, McCullers. That's a referendum on what they can be in the postseason. That's who they hope to line up, and they were all pretty good.
Speaking, by the way, of hurricanes, having talked about Harvey, with Irma aiming at Florida, I just wondered, do the Miami Marlins, do they get back there at all? Do they get back there for the rest of the season? What happens to that ballpark?
You mean practically do they get back there? Well, I guess we're going to know by Tuesday after it sweeps through there. I don't think there's any way to know that. And, their next scheduled home game, I think, is not until next Friday.
Okay.
My guess would be that they would play then, but you know, I don't know that we've had a hurricane like this go through there, so we don't know.
I just sort of wonder, the people that are sitting in the command and control center at Major League Baseball, they've got to have contingencies for this. Got to be one doomsday scenario which says that ballpark is damaged and they're not getting back there. Right?
Well, a lot of it, yeah. I mean, you have to think about it. And we've been through this before. Went through it in 2008. Major League Baseball begged the Astros, don't even try to play this weekend series against the Cubs. And the Astros wouldn't give in, and so they end up playing games in Milwaukee the next week. And it was a mess. And so, yeah, you do think about it all the time. But now we have some lead time. So wouldn't you think by Tuesday – Irma will have cleared out, and then you can begin to assess where you're at. In Houston, Harvey cleared out like Tuesday. We saw some sunshine. And then only by Wednesday or Thursday could you begin to look around and go, how bad is it? And on the west side of town, they are still relieving spillways that are still flooding neighborhoods.
All right, I'll get off that. I'll get to pure baseball. What in God's name is with the Dodgers?
Everything. Well, they were 91-36, as you remember.
Yes.
Since then, they have no starting pitching. They've won one game, 1-8, 6-0-8. And when you see Kershaw get lit up last night and throw his glove against the wall, you say, whoa. Yeah. And they've scored the fewest runs in baseball. So everything. Curtis Granderson's been look, there's some of this, like, some of their guys, Darvish has been terrible. Rich Hill, who's up and down, has not been good. Granderson's been terrible. Corey Seager, their best player, hasn't been on the field. So they just need 10 days to try to get everyone back and see if they can get some magic back. Right now, Arizona is a much better team. Like, if you're handicapping the National League, you say, I'm taking Washington and I'm taking Arizona. But that it means nothing when October rolls around. You still have to do it.
You don't think they could actually lose the lead, do you?
No. Okay. That lead has gone from 21 games to 10. I don't think they're going to lose that. But Arizona is really good right now. Arizona's going to win the wild card game, maybe, and then they're going to pitch this guy named Robbie Ray against the Dodgers, and he's been dominant against them, and so there's a confidence factor. You know, all you can do is, I mean, Kershaw's going to have fewer innings than in the past, and you relied on him before. I was watching the game last night. It was basically like John Wayne is walking in to save us tonight, and he couldn't save us tonight.
That's right. So, All right, let me get off that. I got Barry Svrluga here, and I know his feelings about this, and I want to get yours. The Red Sox-Yankees thing, the stealing of signals, big deal, little deal, no deal.
Well, it's just another headache. They've done this forever. I think Barry wrote this. They've done this forever.
Indeed.
But the technology, and we're at the tip of the iceberg. There's going to be more ways to do this. The technology gives you a chance to do it a different way. Now, my question is this. The signals were going from the video guy to the watch to a guy in the dugout to a guy on the field. Barry, don't you think that's a lot of people that can screw something up?
Yeah, yeah, you could. I mean,
wait. Did he say fat? Wait. No, I know you said fat. No, wait, what did you say?
Well, okay, but don't you think, Richie, that the information is not a particular pitch that has to go through four people? It is the, hey, they're using second signs this inning. It's still only, in my understanding of it, it still only matters if you have a guy on second that you can get that information to, who then, you know, as he takes a lead, touches his left knee for fastball, his right knee for off speed, right?
But that's it's getting complicated,
yep.
And I know hitters that don't want to know. Don't confuse me. It's like certain hitters don't want a guy trying to steal a base. Just let me focus on my job right here. It's a great gamesmanship part of the game. There was almost a fight the other night because somebody, the catcher, thought a guy was peeking back. And the ethics are you do not look back. Earlier this year, Alex Wood, and I saw Clemens do this exact same thing once, stepped off the mound and looked at the guy at second base and basically said, I'm going to hit you in the head the next time. or I'm going to hit him in the head, and he ended up getting thrown out of the game. Clemens would just step off the mound and look back and go, you know what's going to happen.
Can you imagine how intimidating that guy is a massive human being.
Well, this is the history of baseball starts with stealing signals. And if it didn't, then there wouldn't be checkoff signals that every team uses when a guy gets to second base. Richie, my feeling is, so what? So what?
Well, you can't. Yeah, I do agree it is part of it, but you can't just turn the other cheek on it and pretend it didn't happen. You gotta come down on them. The worst part of it to me is that John Farrell said he didn't know what was going on. Like, hey, Johnny, the guy was standing right behind you.
Well,
like, did you notice he was looking down at it? He was checking the time a lot?
But I think part of the point is there are iPads in dugouts and bullpens now. That is accepted because they want to have scouting information, matchup information, stats, splits, all of that at right at their fingertips. So if you live in that world, how is this at all surprising that sign stealing has crossed into that world? Go ahead.
Right. Well, they've told him those iPads are not supposed to be connected to the internet.
They're
I saw a team make a pitching change the other night, and Jose Altuve on the field went over and they handed him an iPad, and he was looking at, I didn't ask him later, was he looking at video or was he looking at a scouting report? I assume it was a scouting report. What does this guy throw? And just to refresh him, it was right there on the field.
Wow.
So yeah, that is part of where we're at now.
You can't hold back that tide. You can't
exactly.
Do it.
No, but yeah. And I agree with Barry. Like, there are guys that don't want to know, and there's a great possibility to screwing it up. So you're leaning in on this curveball, and a guy throws 97 on your hand,
right?
You're going to the hospital.
Well, I would also say it in sign stealing without technology, it has always been incumbent on the other team to code your signs,
that's
to
right.
screw them
right.
up.
That's
so
right.
why
sure.
this should
but,
be
know,
just
and,
another level.
Right, and there's the other part of that is Frank Robinson could watch a pitcher pitch, throw 20 pitches, and would know every pitch he was throwing.
Correct.
But that's the Malcolm Gladwell thing. That's the instinctive,
yeah.
Like, I don't know how I know, and I can't tell you how I know, but I know.
That's,
but Frank
how, that's why he's in the Hall of Fame.
Frank would also say, why don't you know? Because I know.
Yeah. Frank, Davey wants the Orioles got beat once, and Davey's in his office, and he says, Davey Johnson, the manager, and says, well, I didn't see anything out there. I couldn't hit. That's the wrong thing to say in front of your place. Okay? Yes. Don't say that.
Thank you, Richie.
There's a reason you are you. Yeah. Thank you, Tony.
Thank Richie Justice, boys and girls, MLB.com. We'll take a break. We will come back. We'll have jingles and some email. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I got them for nothing.
Zero.
Zero.
Nice.
I have these pants for nothing. So I don't care how terrible they look.
Yeah, even if you got what you paid for.
I got them for nothing. And I told Mike, listen, he said, you're a crazy old man. You're a crazy old man that you would do this.
Stuff all free. Love stuff all free. I got my true size. Got my orange pants. Laugh at me. Don't laugh at me. At Brooks Brothers, I snag these orange pants. 80% off clearance rack. $100 is down to 20. Now take 20 more off with this coupon, please. Cause I like to shop for shit that's free.
Joe Arrow, that's so great, isn't it? Joe Arrow, just so great. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday, to Richie Justice of MLB.com coming on the show today. I'd like to thank our sponsors, SeatGeek, Harry's Razors, MeUndies. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From TJ in Wilmington, North Carolina, the young man related to me by birth is gracing you with his presence on Friday, getting a little food and actually getting to hear the show live. I'm not sure how, but I guess he heard Chatter is open for breakfast. That being said, I couldn't be more jealous. Do me a favor and make sure to serve his food cold. I may not be able to be at the corner of Jennifer Street Northwest and Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, but maybe, just maybe, my brother can hear Mr. Tony Reed eat it to me. So,
there you go.
From Joe Costa in Mount Airy, Maryland, Bootsy, sneaky tall, 95th percentile, right, Michael, 95th?
24 inches high.
Josh Cromwell, Moselle, Mississippi. I don't care what the schedule says. It's not officially football season until James Carville is picking New Mexico State plus 27. Nigel, where is Carville?
Carville's not here.
And what did you do? Did you do wrong? Because the studio has gone 0 days.
Yes, yeah, so we're going to reset that to -1.
From Mike Wilichko in Chicago. Of course it makes sense the Red Sox are devising revolutionary ways to cheat. After all, Harvard is right down the street. From Dave Martin, Dr. Tony, I wanted to send you a quick note to say thank you. I live in Houston, and while our house stayed dry, our entire neighborhood around us was under feet of water. Neighbors have lost everything on their first floor and had to gut their house down to the studs. We have tried to help where we can, currently have a family living with us as they put their life back together. As an aside, in response to your question about flood insurance, most in my area, which is over 1.5 hours from the coast, don't have flood insurance because our area drains well, isn't the 100-year floodplain, and isn't in it, and hasn't never flooded before. But when you have a 1,000-year flood, a lot of things you don't expect to happen will happen. I want to say thank you for coming back, starting the podcast up. As we try to head back to work after a week of chaos and devastation, the laughs and summer vacation stories have a very welcome break during my now even longer commute. I know many have said it before, but I want to echo the sentiment that you and the gang really do make a difference in our lives, so thank you. I'll be in D.C. September 17th and 18th. I will stop by Chatter for a beer, which is very, very nice. From Sean Morrissey in Frederick, Maryland, along the same theme, asking that you and the gang send happy thoughts to good friends in St. John's, U.S. Virgin Islands. They're from the D.C. area. Their son CJ was on your show on 980 in the mid to late 90s. We even gave him a shout-out, year-end write-up in the Post. The family has been in the Virgin Islands for several years, are the proud owners of the Soggy Dollar Bar, one of the most famous bars in the Caribbean. Unfortunately, Irma nearly washed it away completely. Oof. Everyone is safe, but the damage has been done. Anita from Alaska lived in St. John as a child, and we spent the past 2 days commiserating, pulling for everyone in the Virgin Islands, Florida, and anyone in her path. From Jesse Ford in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. As you recently mentioned, that you didn't know what was really on the menu at Chatter, when Tori asked if there was an omelet on the menu, I thought I'd lend some help to your investigation into your missing green tomatoes. I'd start with the staff at Chatter, and particularly the kitchen staff. On the lunch menu, there is a delicious sounding starter of fried green tomatoes. I didn't know. Mike from Burke, Virginia said, I showed up for breakfast the other day, but Chatter was serving the menu from exactly 1 year ago, so I left.
Well, there you go.
Mike, who likes to crush me whenever possible. Ann Gilpin in Roxbury, Connecticut. My husband and I have been actors our entire careers with some modest success. I use my maiden name, which is how most people know me. We have three children, two fine lads and a daughter who is also an actress and is one of the leads on a Netflix new show called Glow. I've heard about that, wrestling league
it's cool.
in the 1980s. Yes, she's been getting a lot of notice, and I now identify myself as Betty Gilpin's mother wherever I go. Don't get me wrong. I'm quite pleased and proud. However, I was in my local bookstore in June getting congratulated and introduced as Betty Gilpin's mother. As I stood at the cash register to pay for my book, the manager, in a conspiratorial whisper, said, "I heard your email read on the Tony Kornheiser show last week." My eyes welled up. I'm famous. Eat that, Betty. Isn't that nice? That's from Ann Gilpin. T. Hughes writes, "Clown car, bro, yay or nay? Last year, my team name was Russell Wilson Ramos." And that's funny.
That's good.
Russell Wilson Ramos is very, very
good. That's really good.
We miss him, don't we? The Buffalo?
Oh, yeah. The Buffalo, sure.
Don't we
miss
the Buffalo?
Terrible year in Tampa, yeah.
Did he really? Oh, that's too bad. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, do wear white. Thanks for coming. Applaud yourselves.
How about those apples?
Every day I saw myself, my expression, always taking on so many different shapes, planning my escape, but I got no sense of direction, trying to save the piece of me they didn't take. When I was 17,
hard times, through and hard times, when I left you, it
prison break. Stones down, breaking all those rocks. Married to the chain gang, escape those wedding locks. Feels like hard times, new and hard times. When I left you, it was just like a prison break.
Prison break.